Hello and welcome to the World Transformation Movement's Freedom Essay Series. I'm Tim McCartney Snape and this is Freedom Essay 21. How did we humans acquire our all-loving, unconditionally selfless moral conscience? Written by Jeremy Griffith, 2017. The previous Freedom Essay 20 explained how our species' guilt over our present human condition-afflicted, angry and egocentric behaviour led us to contrive the excuse that we have savage, competitive, selfish, and aggressive instincts, despite clear evidence that we humans actually have cooperative, selfless, and loving moral instincts, the voice or expression of which is our conscience. As Charles Darwin recognized, the moral sense perhaps affords the best and highest distinction between man and the lower animals. And to have acquired our altruistic moral instinctive nature, it follows that our distant ancestors must have been cooperative, selfless, and loving, not competitive, selfish, and aggressive like other animals, which the following extracts from Freedom Essay 53 serve to illustrate. And you can find many more wonderful descriptions like these of our species' pastime and innocence in that essay. In 360 BC, Plato, the greatest of all philosophers, wrote of our state of innocence before we had any experience of evils to come, when we were simple and calm and happy, pure ourselves, and not yet enshrined in that living tomb which we carry about now that we are imprisoned. A time when we lived a blessed and spontaneous life, where neither there was any violence or devouring of one another, no sex as humans practice it now, or war or quarrel among them, and they dwelt naked and mostly in the open air, and they had no beds but lay on soft couches of grass. In his poem Works and Days, Plato's Greek compatriot Hesiod, some 400 years before Plato, wrote of our distant ancestors that when gods alike and mortals rose to birth, a golden race the immortals formed on earth. Like gods they lived with calm, untroubled mind, free from the toils and anguish of our kind. Strangers to ill, their lives in feast flowed by. They with abundant goods, midst quiet lands, all willing shared the gathering of their hands. The author Richard Heinberg states in his book, Memories and Visions of Paradise, that all mythologies acknowledge a time of togetherness before the emergence of the human condition. Every religion begins with the recognition that human consciousness has been separated from the divine source, that a former sense of oneness has been lost. Everywhere in religion and myth, there is an acknowledgement that we have departed from an original innocence and can return to it only through the resolution of some profound inner discord. And finally, the philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau wrote that even with regard to some humans living today, nothing is more gentle than man in his primitive state. The great biological question this leaves screaming out to be answered is, if all this evidence is true, that, as Darwin recognized, we have inherited altruistic, unconditionally selfless, cooperative and loving moral instincts from our distant ancestors, then how could our ancestors possibly have developed them? Indeed, this question of how we humans acquired our moral instinctive self, or soul, has been one of the great outstanding biological questions. Darwin described altruism as the one special difficulty with natural selection. And more recently, primatologist Richard Wrangham described it as a question that has lain unsolved at the core of biology ever since Darwin. And the reason it has been such a huge question for us biologists is because we know that genes normally cannot select for unconditionally selfless, fully cooperative traits, simply because such traits tend to be self-eliminating and so normally can't become established in a species. By all means, you can be selfless towards me and sacrifice your genes for me, but I'm not about to be selfless towards you and sacrifice my genes for you. The process of natural selection dictates that selfish opportunism will supposedly always exploit selflessness. So how could such a selfish process possibly have created such loving selflessness in us? As explained in Chapter 5 of Freedom, the answer was through nurturing. To explain what is so significant about a mother's nurturing of her offspring, I first need to point out that a mother's maternal instinct to care for her offspring is selfish because she is ensuring the reproduction of her genes by looking after her offspring who carry her genes. So maternalism is a selfish trait, which, as I've just said, genetic traits normally have to be for them to reproduce to carry on into the next generation. However, and this is all important, from the infant's perspective, maternalism does have the appearance of being selfless. From the infant's perspective, it is being treated unconditionally, selflessly. The mother is giving her offspring food, warmth, shelter, support, and protection for apparently nothing in return. So it follows that if the infant can remain in infancy for an extended period and be treated with a lot of seemingly altruistic love, it will be indoctrinated with that selfless love and grow up to behave accordingly. And over many generations, that behaviour will become instinctive because genetic selection will inevitably follow and reinforce any development process occurring in a species. The difficulty was in getting the development of unconditional selflessness to occur in the first place, for once it was regularly occurring, it would naturally become instinctive over time. And if we think about primates being semi-upright from living in trees, and thus having their arms free to hold a dependent infant, it's clear that they are specially facilitated to support and prolong the mother-infant relationship, and so develop this nurtured, loving, cooperative behaviour. So it was through this love indoctrination process that our primate ancestors developed our moral conscience. The bonobo, the species of great ape that lives south of the Congo River in Africa, is the most cooperative, selfless, and loving of all non-human primates, and they are extraordinarily focused on nurturing their infants, as this quote from Sue Savage-Rumbaugh and Roger Lewin's book, Kanzi, The Ape at the Brink of the Human Mind, evidences. Bonobo life is centred around the offspring. Unlike what happens amongst chimpanzees, all members of the bonobo social group help with infant care and share food with infants. If you are a bonobo infant, you can do no wrong. Bonobo females and their infants form the core of the group. At this point in the essay, a number of very sensitive and touching photos of bonobos nurturing their infants are included, such as a mother lovingly playing with her infant. As to how cooperative, selfless, and loving bonobos are, the following quotes, which are all referred to in Chapter 5 of Freedom, provide powerful evidence. Firstly, from filmmakers who are producing a documentary about them. They're surely the most fascinating animals on the planet. They're the closest animals to man, in that they share 99% of our genetic makeup. Once I got hit on the head with a branch that had a bonobo on it. I sat down and the bonobo noticed I was in a difficult situation and came and took me by the hand and moved my hair back like they do. So they live on compassion, and that's really interesting to experience. Yes, as bonobo zookeeper Barbara Bell said, adult bonobos demonstrate tremendous compassion for each other. For example, Kitty, the eldest female, is completely blind and hard of hearing. Sometimes she gets lost and confused. They'll just pick her up and take her to where she needs to go. Bonobo's unlimited capacity for love is also apparent in this wonderful first-hand account from bonobo researcher Vanessa Woods. Bonobo love is like a laser beam. They stop. They stare at you as though they've been waiting their whole lives for you to walk into their jungle. And then they love you with such helpless abandon that you love them back. You have to love them back. You can watch some exquisite footage of the nurtured peace in bonobo society that was filmed during Jeremy's 2014 visit with Professor Harry Prosen to the bonobos at the Milwaukee County Zoo on the main WTM videos page on our website, the link to which is included at this point in the essay. The consequences of this nurturing of unconditional love in bonobos is apparent in this report from Japanese researchers. Bonobos historically have existed in a stable environment rich in sources of food, and, unlike chimpanzees, have developed a more cohesive social structure. For example, up to 100 bonobos at a time from several groups spend their night together. That would not be possible with chimpanzees, because there would be brutal fighting between rival groups. At this point in the essay is a photo of a group of bonobos resting in a grassy glade that perfectly equates with the description that Plato gave earlier about what life was like for humans back in the golden age of nurtured togetherness. And they dwelt naked and mostly in the open air, and they had no beds but lay on soft couches of grass. Clearly, we have a perfect instinctive memory, if we don't choose to deny it, of what life was like before the fall. Because Plato didn't know of the existence of bonobos and yet instinctively knew exactly what our bonobo-like life before the fall was like. It might be mentioned that, as explained in Freedom Essay 24 and Chapter 7 of Freedom, and briefly summarised two paragraphs below, another consequence of our ape ancestors having been nurtured with unconditional selflessness or love is that that orientation to love liberated the development of a fully conscious mind, which this further quote from Barbara Bell evidences is emerging in bonobos. They're extremely intelligent. They understand a couple of hundred words. It's like being with 9 2.5-year-olds all day. And they also love to tease me a lot, like during training. If I were to ask for their left foot, they'll give me their right foot and laugh and laugh and laugh. At this point in the essay, there is an extraordinary video of the famed animal photographer Joel Sartori photographing the bonobo Kanzi that reveals just how conscious bonobos are. We encourage you to watch it and see how, just like a human 2-year-old, Kanzi loves to play and how happy and excited he is and how well-behaved he is, a behaviour that is no longer common in human-conditioned traumatised human children of today. With regard to the question of how we humans became conscious and why bonobos are well on their way to becoming fully conscious, the following is a brief summary of the full explanation which, as mentioned, you can read in Freedom Essay 24 and Chapter 7 of Freedom. And I should mention that, like the origin of the human condition and how we acquired our moral nature and the meaning of existence, the question of the origin of humans' fully conscious mind is one of the great outstanding mysteries in science that a truthful analysis of the human condition finally makes possible to explain. It was the nurturing love indoctrination process that enabled consciousness to emerge, because while a mother's nurturing of her infants enabled unconditionally selfless behaviour to develop and over time become instinctual, this training in unconditional selflessness produced a further accidental byproduct. It produced brains trained to think selflessly and thus truthfully and thus effectively and thus become conscious of the relationship of events that occur through time. Other species that can't develop love indoctrination and thus unconditional selflessness can't think truthfully and thus effectively because unconditional selflessness, which they are unable to develop an orientation to, is the truthful, integrative theme or meaning of existence. The teleological, holistic, order of matter developing, integrative, unconditional selflessness themed physical law of negative entropy that we live under, which we have personified as God, will be explained shortly in Freedom Essay 23. The fact is, you can't hope to think truthfully and thus effectively if you're lying. Species whose behaviour is governed by genetic selfishness have emerging minds that are, in effect, dishonestly orientated. Their minds are alienated from the truth. Such species won't, in fact, allow selflessness recognising truthful and thus effective thinking, which means they can never make sense of experience and thus never become conscious. What all this means is that the human mind has been alienated from the truth twice in its history. Firstly, in our pre-love indoctrinated past, when, like all other animals, except now for bonobos, who have almost completed the process of love indoctrination, our brains were blocked from thinking truthfully. And secondly, in our present state, where our minds have been alienated from the truth as a result of our fearful denial of the human condition. All these descriptions of bonobos included earlier, and you can read many more in Chapter 5 of Freedom, provide powerful insights into how extraordinarily cooperative, selfless, and loving bonobos our closest living relatives are. In fact, comparing the skeleton of our early Australopithecine ancestor, who lived between 3.9 and 3 million years ago, with the skeleton of a bonobo, shows just how similar our species are. The truth is that our ancestors are far more similar to bonobos with regard to their size, their bipedality, environment, lack of large canines, and lack of size differentiation between males and females than any other existing primate, which indicates that our ancestors followed a similar path of development to the bonobos. So the evidence is that it was through the nurturing, love indoctrination process that we acquired our altruistic moral nature. Indeed, the recent astonishing fossil discoveries, particularly those of the 4.5 million-year-old Ardipithecus that reveal these similarities between our ancestors and bonobos, have led the leading anthropologist C. Owen Lovejoy to acknowledge that our species-defining cooperative mutualism can now be seen to extend well beyond the deepest Pliocene, well beyond 5.3 million years ago. Much more can be read in the next Freedom Essay 22 about the insights being gleaned from the fossil record. Although bonobos and the fossil record are only now revealing their corroborating evidence, the nurturing, love indoctrination explanation for our extraordinary, unconditionally selfless, all-loving, social, moral, instinctive self or soul is in fact so obvious that only 3 years after Darwin tentatively ascribed the origin of our social instinct to parental affections, it was put forward as a developed theory by the philosopher John Fiske in his 1874 book Outlines of Cosmic Philosophy based on the doctrine of evolution. The outstanding question, therefore, is why did Fiske's nurturing explanation of the origins of our moral instincts that was described at the time as being far more important than Darwin's principle of natural selection and one of the most beautiful contributions ever made to the evolution of man, virtually vanish from scientific discourse? You can read much more about Fiske's theory in Chapter 6.3 of Freedom. The answer is that this nurturing explanation has been an unbearably confronting truth for parents trying to nurture their children adequately under the extreme duress of the human condition, a competitive, selfish, and aggressive state that developed when humans became fully conscious after this time when we lived cooperatively and lovingly in the metaphorical Garden of Eden state of original innocence. Our present insecurity about our inability to adequately nurture our children is painfully apparent in this quote from the best-selling children's author, John Marsden. "The biggest crime you can commit in our society is to be a failure as a parent, and people would rather admit to being an axe murderer than being a bad father or mother." It is only now that we can explain the competitive, selfish, and aggressive upset state of the human condition, and thus understand why the present human condition afflicted human race hasn't been able to adequately nurture our infants, that it becomes safe to finally admit that nurturing is what made us human. It was nurturing that gave us our moral soul and created humanity. Again, this nurturing explanation of humans' moral instincts is presented in full in Chapter 5 of Freedom, while the biological explanation of why we became competitive, selfish, and aggressive sufferers of the human condition when our conscious mind developed is the subject of video or Freedom Essay 3, and fully explained in Chapter 3 of Freedom. And so ends Jeremy Griffiths' essay. You've been listening to Freedom Essay 21, which you can read by clicking on the Read Essay button on your device or by going to the WTM homepage at www.humancondition.com, where all the essays and videos can be found. To learn more about a topic that was raised in this podcast, please go to the written version of the essay because it includes references to other relevant Freedom Essays, as well as the sources of any quotes used. These essays were created in 2017 to 2021 by Jeremy Griffith, Damon Isherwood, Fiona Cullen-Ward and Bronnie Fitzgerald of the Sydney WTM Centre. I'm Tim McCartney-Snape. Thanks for listening.